Greetings and welcome to Old Town Charm, New Town Spirit, a podcast about Williston, Vermont. I'm your host, Steve Shepherd. My goal with this series is twofold. First, to talk about our town. What's new, what's old, what's interesting, and what are the things that we all look at every day but don't necessarily see because, let's face it, we look at them all the time and just don't see them anymore. Second, as a member of the Williston Planning Commission, I want to talk about our town in terms of where it's going and why. In other words, I want to serve as sort of a translator between the fascinating and complicated world of town planning. And trust me, even for a town as small as Williston, the process is incredibly complicated. And what that means for those of us who live here or work here or just come to visit. So thanks for joining me. And now, on to the program. Everybody knows that in 1929, the Great Depression hit and brought the world to a glacial standstill. Banks failed, companies shuttered their doors, and 25% of the nation's workforce lost their jobs. In response, the federal government, among other things, launched the Works Progress Administration, or WPA, a government-funded program with the singular goal of putting people back to work. Some saw it as one of the greatest things the government has ever done. Others reviled it as a make-work program that wasted precious financial resources and attracted the attention of the House Un-American Activities Committee. We can debate its merits all day long, but it's not what this episode is about. One of the projects initiated by the WPA was something called the Federal Writers Project, created in 1935 to provide jobs for out-of-work writers. It was one of several New Deal arts programs known as Federal Project No. 1, or Federal 1. The Federal Writers Project employed thousands of people and produced hundreds of publications, including state guides, city guides, local histories, oral histories, ethnographies, and children's books. In addition to creating jobs for writers, it also put unemployed librarians, clerks, researchers, editors, and historians back to work, doing a lot of meaningful things. 10,000 people found employment with the Federal Writers Project, which created jobs, but also took on the task of creating a unique self-portrait of America through the publication of a series of state-specific guidebooks. Between 1935 and 1943, the project consumed 0.002% of the overall WPA budget, about $27 million. The American Guides series presented the history, geography, and culture of every state in the nation, plus the territories of Alaska, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C. Hawaii wasn't on the radar yet. The books went a long way to stimulate tourism across the country once people had the wherewithal to go on vacation again following the Depression. The guides were written by writers from individual states and territories and included descriptions of every city and town, automobile travel routes, suggested driving tours, photographs, maps, and chapters on natural resources, culture, and geography. They even included essays about the various cultures of people living in each state. Now, we can criticize the Federal Writers Project as a make-work program or a waste of precious taxpayer funds, but it did yield some of our most important writers, including Lauren Isley, Nelson Algren, Saul Bellow, John Cheever, Ralph Ellison, Zora Neale Hurston, and Studs Terkel. I just found a first edition copy of the Vermont Guide on eBay, which I bought for the princely sum of $20. I've been reading it for the last few days, and it is charming, written in that inimitable flowing style of the 1930s, when it was still okay to use flowery descriptive language in books. It kind of reminds me of the road trips I used to take as a child with my parents and brothers when we'd stop at roadside attractions such as farm stands selling fresh apple or cherry juice, or a sign that said, "This way to the mystery spot," or we'd look for the inevitable Burma Shave signs, or a Stuckey's where, if we were lucky, Dad would stop to let us get a pecan roll. The book bears a copyright, 1937, by the Vermont State Planning Board, and here's how it begins. Vermont, A Guide to the Green Mountain State, is, in order of publication, the second volume in the New England group of the American Guide series written by members of the Federal Writers Project of the Works Progress Administration. Though the project was originally designed to give useful employment to needy writers and research workers, it has gradually developed the more ambitious objective of utilizing the talent among the unemployed writers to create and present a comprehensive portrait of America. Since such a task has never been undertaken before, it was necessary to design new methods as well as to prepare new tools. The result is a collective work to which all the writers and research workers contributed according to their talents, and the final collation of facts and the rewriting and editing of the material was done by a few experienced authors and editors in central offices. This book, therefore, represents a blend of the work of the entire personnel, aided by consultants who have volunteered their services most generously. It continues. The first community church in America was built a century and a quarter ago in a small Vermont village. The fact has gone little noted by commentators zealous to preserve the oversimplified concept of Vermont as the epitome of individualism. Yet it was no historical inadvertence, for surely the Green Mountain Boys themselves attest cooperation to be one of the valid and basic traditions of the state. A cooperative book, therefore, on Vermont by Vermonters, no more offends propriety than a cooperative creamery, or the house raising of earlier days, or any other community enterprise. New Englanders have always had to work together, and if writers are to be induced to work together, that slightly staggering postulate upon which the American Guide series of publications is based, New England writers might be expected to bring it off with somewhat less than the normal anguish. It is not then so unusual that Vermont should be represented fairly early in the list of state guidebooks created by the Federal Writers Project of the WPA. Perhaps that skepticism, ostensibly joyless but actually one of the few secret delights of the Puritan soul which one finds so common north of Boston, was a help. No Vermont farmer will admit until after the hay is in the barn that he really expects a catch in any given season. No Vermonter is old enough to remember a season when crops really did fail. So here's what the book has to say about Williston. Williston, altitude 501, population 961, township, named for grantee Samuel Willis, is stretched along the broad plain of a plateau. The long village street is distinguished by houses of clean-cut colonial design and sober red brick structures. The large brick Bingham House, built by the Millers, who were among the first settlers, has entrances on front and side fashioned in the Greek Revival spirit. The Federated Church is white clapboard, with a tall spire. Standing side by side at the western end of the street are three simple one-story red brick buildings, almost identical in construction, a former church, a woodman's hall, and the town hall. In the farming region south of Williston Village, Ringling Brothers Circus once bought a number of farms on which they planned to keep their cold-weather animals during the winter months. Their plans didn't materialize, and the farms passed into other hands. West of Williston, the highway runs over open plains, the peaks of the Adirondacks gradually coming into view to the west. This description is part of a driving tour, one of many that are laid out in the book. It continues, saying that at 33.6 miles along the tour, the transition from the foothills to the Champlain Valley is definitely completed, and on the horizon, the Adirondack Wall rises in a blue, irregular barrier, the western ramparts of Lake Champlain. At 36.4 miles is the Burlington Airport, one of the best landing fields in the East. It has been developed largely with government relief funds. There are two hard-surfaced runways, hangars, and a modern administration building with a beacon. By the way, one of the interesting facts that I learned while reading the book was that at one point, the federal government proposed to build a multi-lane interstate highway running from the Massachusetts border to the Canadian border, along the spine of the Green Mountains. Thankfully, the state planners declined to participate. Can you imagine? And what if the circus had come to town and stayed? What would Williston be like today? I'm Steve Shepard. Thank you for listening.